Have you been told that you snore? Do you get drowsy? Not off during the middle of the day? These could be symptoms of sleep apnea. Welcome to Teeth Talk. Today, we are going to talk about this dangerous condition with Dr. Ashley Mann from Charles Ashley Mann Family and Cosmetic Dentistry, offices in Cary Garner and Fuquay Varina. Dr. Mann, hope you're doing well today.
I appreciate you having me, and you know, I hope people are sleeping by the pool or the beach today, as hot as it is.
Sleep apnea, it's been called a silent killer, and it's something that you have been screening your patients for years. What is your role in helping diagnose sleep apnea?
Well, I think as we stated before, you know, a dentist's job is not just to look at the teeth. We also look at the surrounding tissue, and we also look at your airway, and we can also see signs of certain conditions that affect sleep. And that is one of the reasons why I started, you know, getting advanced education after dental school on sleep, is because, you know, we see a patient every 6 months, and we're also looking in their oral environment more so than many who probably don't visit their, their general physician every year, or they don't go to an oral, you know, ear, nose, and throat unless they have sinus issues. So I thought that it was my obligation, since I'm looking in the mouth and evaluating certain x-rays, to be knowledgeable about sleep breathing disorders and the things that I can look for as signs in the mouth that someone is having problems breathing at night.
You have talked in the past shows about x-ray, the x-ray revealing some things that I guess would open up the conversation about sleep apnea and sleep breathing disorders between you and the patient.
Yeah, so basically we take a 3D scan, which is an x-ray, on all of our patients. And many patients probably know of a panoramic x-ray. It goes around the head. It's not your normal ones where we're taking it of your teeth, but we get to take your sinuses. We also get to take your nose, your septum, and we can also see the airway. And that's the most important part, because we can measure the size of that airway. You know, a normal airway usually has around 10 millimeters to 12 millimeters. We see airways as small as 2 millimeters. That's about the size of a straw that you stir coffee with. And so you can imagine, that small of an airway, you're not getting enough oxygen. Now throw in the fact that, hey, when you lay down to sleep at night and you sleep on your back, your lower jaw is being forced backwards due to gravity, and it 2 millimeters might go to 1 millimeter or completely close off. If it completely closes off, then the person has a hard time sleeping. So I love those x-rays because it gives me a chance to open up the opportunity to start asking questions about how someone is sleeping, how they're feeling during the day. And that really is the gateway to me being able to determine if someone needs a sleep study.
So once you determine that the airway could be an issue, what happens next?
Yes, we ask a series of questions about their sleep. How likely are they to go to a movie and fall asleep during a movie? How likely are they to fall asleep if they're a passenger, not a driver, but a passenger in a car for more than an hour? How likely is it that they nod off during the day at work? So there's a series of questions that we can ask, and then we can create a score that can determine whether someone needs a sleep study. Now, one of the things that we have in our office is we have a pulse oximeter that we give to our patients for free that we suspect could have some sleep breathing disorders like sleep apnea. And we allow them to take it home, because really the ultimate problem with sleep breathing disorders is your oxygen levels drop while you sleep. You know, we want your blood saturation of oxygen to stay above 92%. And if that falls below 92%, your body goes into fight or flight. It knows that something's going on to keep you from getting oxygen to the cells, which is the most critical thing that our cells need. And so it's going to fight to keep the person alive, because it knows, hey, I need oxygen quickly. So your heart rate goes up, And eventually, a lot of people go and wake up, and then they call for, turnover, and then the apnea goes away and the oxygen levels increase again. So, that's one of the main ways that we can tell if someone needs to go and pay for a study is we send this pulse oximeter home that they wear on their thumb, and it sends me back a report, and I can look to see if their oxygen levels have dropped and how many times are dropping during the night.
And it seems that obesity is certainly one of them.
Well, your BMI, so your body mass index, is measured as well when we do the score. And a BMI above 25 or more increases your risk significantly for sleep apnea. And a lot of that has to do with the amount of weight that you're putting around the soft tissues of your neck, which basically is, if you think about it, that is your airway. So the more fat that you have around that area, the more pressure is putting against the soft tissue, which can collapse the airway when you're sleeping. Now, it kind of goes hand in hand. If you have sleep apnea, it does decrease your metabolism. So those people out there that are overweight and trying to lose weight, if they have sleep apnea, it does decrease the metabolic rate, which means slows down the amount of weight loss. You have to do more exercise than the average person if you have sleep apnea and severe sleep apnea. So, obesity plays a major role. The other roles that we see sleep apnea in very skinny, low body mass index people, and that is for those who have what we call an overbite. Deep overbites means their chin is further back. Their jaw has not fully developed. Now, just because your jaw hasn't developed and your teeth are straight doesn't mean you can't have problems. Because what happens is your jaw, if it's further back, means that you're automatically going to have a smaller airway. So as your jaw grows forward, your airway expands. And so you have to be extremely careful if you have a severe underbite, which means your lower jaw is further back and you could easily get sleep apnea quicker than someone whose jaw was in the normal position. Those are the most two common things that we see, obesity and then the class, what we call a class two orthodontic diagnosis, meaning that your lower jaw is too far back.
Thanks for tuning in to Teeth Talk today, heard every Sunday at this time at 4:30 on WPTF. If you missed any portion of the show or if you're interested in other dental topics, I encourage you to check out our podcast. Each show is on demand at WPTF.com, also available wherever you get your podcast. Certain people are more prone to sleep apnea. We'll tell you more about that when we continue. This is Teeth Talk on WPTF, FM 92.9, AM 680, and WPTF.com. News, talk, traffic. We're back here on Teeth Talk with Dr. Ashley Mann. So how does sleep apnea affect the heart?
Well, the fight or flight, when it takes over, it increases your heart rate significantly. I've seen it spike from 65 beats per minute into an apnea event. It might jump up to 120 to 130 beats per minute. So you can imagine that's double from resting up to 120. As this occurs over and over and over again, your heart, can become damaged. It increases your blood pressure. Your heart has to work harder because think about it. If your oxygen levels drop, your cells need oxygen. So your heart, your brain is sending a signal to your heart to work harder to get the blood flow quicker because your oxygen levels are lower. And that's why it takes such a significant toll on your cardiovascular, along with the fact that it increases your blood pressure, and even just not having a good quality sleep, not getting into REM and getting deep sleep long enough can cause other health issues, which can lead to cardiovascular disease, such as a low metabolism, being tired all the time, not being able to exercise like you would like to because of the fatigue. So there is multiple aspects, but the main aspect is that oxygen levels, when they drop, your heart has to work in overdrive.
We mentioned snoring could be a symptom. What makes us snore in the first place?
There's two types of snoring. There's an upper airway and a lower airway. An upper airway is when the snoring predominantly occurs in the nose. That's the least common, but there are people who have what we call deviated septums, or they have really large turbulence in their nose, and that can restrict airflow. And in both cases, the lower and the upper, really what snoring is the vibration of soft tissue as air is passing over it. There is a restriction, and when that air passes through, it vibrates the tissue. And the more constricted it is, the louder the snoring. A small constriction may lead to some light snoring. But if you have someone that's a very chronic, you know, snoring where everybody hears them in the house, two floors up and with the bedroom door shut, that's likely to have sleep apnea.
Well, why can some of us snore and not have sleep apnea?
Well, again, I think the reason why some people can snore and not have sleep apnea is the soft tissue is not impeding and doesn't close off their airway, and they're still getting that oxygen level that they need to so that their heart rate doesn't go up. Sleep apnea, really, like I said, is defined when your oxygen levels drop significantly. Mm-hmm. And the snoring in some people, it's that upper airway. And people who have a constricted upper airway, even though they snore through their nose, they don't have a problem breathing through their mouth. And those are the patients that tend to snore that don't have sleep apnea. The ones that have the lower obstruction, which is in the throat, those are loud snorers, and they tend to have apnea. Most even light snorers sometimes will have what we call light sleep apnea.
You mentioned before that if you suspect someone with sleep apnea, you give them a device called a pulse oximeter, I believe. What happens to the data that you collect from that?
We do that two ways in our office. We can actually refer you to a sleep center where you sleep overnight. But depending on your medical insurance, and again, this is a medical condition, depending on your medical insurance determines what happens next. Usually most insurance companies, and what I recommend is you do a take-home sleep study. And these take-home sleep studies basically are prescribed by what we call a sleep physician. This can be done with telemedicine now. We know how popular telemedicine is. So we set up that telemedicine with a doctor and the patient, and he does the questioning and reviews our findings, and then he will prescribe a take-home monitor that a patient wears for 2 nights. They pick that monitor up in our office. We have several of them, and they wear them. And they, after 2 nights, they bring it back into our office. We download that information and send it to the sleep physician. And then the sleep physician sends a report back to me. And then I sit down with the patient because I've been trained to read these reports. And the sleep physician actually makes a diagnosis on that report. The diagnosis come in mild, moderate, or severe. And that is the types of apneas that we see. Depending on the number of apneas you have at night, that basically is how they categorize you. If you have a low number, you're considered mild. If you have a moderate number, you're considered moderate, and then a high. Those scores go from 0 to 10 is mild. 10 to 30 is considered moderate, and anything above 30, and that's per hour, Mike, anything above 30 episodes per hour is considered severe.
If you suspect you or someone you know having sleep apnea, contact one of Dr. Mann's offices in Cary Garner or Fuquay-Wave Arena and get tested. Go to smileman.com, smileman.com. When we continue, we'll talk about how Dr. Mann can actually help people with mild cases of sleep apnea. You're tuned to Teeth Talk on WPTF. Today on Teeth Talk, we're talking about sleep apnea. What is the one thing that you want to get across to our Teeth Talk listeners today?
Yeah, the most important thing is to be diagnosed. It's a silent killer. If you have undiagnosed sleep apnea, your chance of dying early is greater than someone who smokes. That's hard to believe, isn't it? And that's because it takes such a toll on the cardiovascular system. So the first thing is to get diagnosed.
Once you determine someone has a mild case, I've heard in the past you talk about a special appliance that can really help them.
If you're in the mild to moderate category, you really have an option. You have an option of the appliances you talked about. It's called a mandibular advancement device. And what it does is it holds your mandible in an outward position slightly so that your airway can't close off. These are very comfortable. There's about an 85% acceptance rates, meaning that someone wears it at least 5 nights out of the week for it to be considered acceptance. And it's very comfortable. We 3D print these now, so they're very thin. They're not bulky in your mouth. And our patients love them. And if you have mild or moderate, we have a great success rate for treating those patients so that they don't have apnea events. Basically, we do airway measurements when a patient comes in, and we send those results to a lab, and then the lab will fabricate a personalized appliance for the patient so that it takes away their apneas. Now, we want to make sure that we take away those apneas. So what we do is we send that pulse oximeter home after 4 weeks of wear and make sure that the oxygen levels aren't dropping and that it's working. The other option is something that people are less compliant with, and that's the CPAP. You probably heard about that, Mike. Everybody knows about how horrible they are. It's a mask that you have to wear. Take some time to get adjusting to. There's only about a 55% acceptance rate for CPAPs. It's about a 30% difference. So for those people who have severe apnea, they have to start out with the CPAP. Most medical insurance require that. And if they can't tolerate it, and there's quite a few, about 45% of the people who are non-compliant and can't tolerate it, then we have successfully treated those patients with the mandibular advancement device. We've got them down, some even down to zero apneas. But the key is to get them down as much as we can, below 10 if we can, is our goal for those who have severe sleep apnea. And that helps significantly give them a better quality of sleep and reduces their cardiovascular load. Those are the two main options. Now, there are other options out there. There's some implants that can be placed now that will actually break the apneas as soon as they happen so that you don't constantly wake up and have to do it. Your brain actually does it. It sends a message to your brain to break the apnea without interfering with sleep.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. I'm not sure if they work for everybody. That's something more that that medical doctors place, your ear, nose, and throat doctors, because it has to be surgically placed. But it's another option for those people who are CPAP intolerant. Those are implants are usually done on patients that have severe apnea that can't tolerate the CPAP. I think most insurances require still, even with the implant, that you try the CPAP first.
For people to snore, this device can pretty much put an end to that, right?
I mean, I have a lot of patients that don't have sleep apnea, and their spouses are like, hey, you know, I can't tolerate it, you know, the snoring anymore. And we place these mandibular advancement devices in, and the snoring stops. And the reason for that is when you move your lower jaw forward, you tighten that tissue. It's no longer loose, and you open the airway up, so you don't get that vibration anymore. Now, if you're upper, for those snorers out there that have the nasal snoring, the Breathe Right strips are great for that, because what they do is they open the upper airway and that keeps that tissue in the upper airway from vibrating and decreases that kind of snoring. But if you have the lower airway, which is in the throat, about the only thing that is available for those people are the mandibular advancement advancement devices, and there are some laser treatments that can be done, like reducing some of the tissue back there to help decrease snoring.
If you suspect yourself or someone you know of having sleep apnea, I encourage you to make an appointment with one of Dr. Mann's offices. Charles Ashley Mann Family and Cosmetic Dentistry is in Cary, Garner, and Fuquay, Varina. Call 919-462-9338 for an appointment. Go to smileman.com, the smile, MANN.com. Well, what will we be talking about next week?
Well, we hadn't talked about this in a while, but we're going to talk about cavities. We're going to talk about how to prevent them and why you shouldn't ignore them.
Well, join us next Sunday at 4:30 on WPTF for that. For Dr. Ashley Mann, I'm Mike Slaman. That's Teeth Talk. Keep smiling.